Welcome to episode 36 of Digital Outbox. Hello and welcome to another exciting, super exciting edition of Digital Outbox. Joining me this week, Thelma to my Louise, it's Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
I am not too bad. So it's a dynamic duo this week.
We've been we need the Batman and Robin thing, don't we? You
know. I'll put in a sound effect later, so it sounds like I'm a genius.
The spinning logo and the But anyway, carry on.
That one. In my head, that was fantastic. To everybody else,
it unfortunately, was like, only in your head.
Only in my head. So yeah, Chris is off doing something less boring instead, and Shaki was waiting for broadband. Since he's moved back to Glasgow, every week he's got an excuse. So poor,
very poor. Although he did make it for the iPad special in the middle.
Well, do you know he couldn't miss that.
Definitely not.
Couldn't miss that. And we shall be talking some more about the iPad tonight.
We certainly will.
But first, some exciting quarterly reports. or not really.
Exciting?
Yeah. So Apple quarterly reports, massive revenue. It's now a $50+ billion company.
Wow.
Which is quite scary.
I'd take a chunk of that.
I'd just take I'd even take a little bit of the knots. But new products are planning to release this year. A very strong starting this week with a major new product that we're really excited about. I wonder what that was. But yeah, it's looking really good for Apple.
Yeah.
And it's looking really good for Microsoft. So they went a bit of the doldrums. I guess it was a year and a bit ago from now. But Windows 7 has done very well for them.
Yeah, yeah, and not surprising, really. It's a good solid operating system.
So. Oh, you really struggled to say that.
I did, and it is about time. You know, it's only been about 10 years in the making.
That should have been the intro. 10 years in the making.
That's right.
But to be honest, the real big news last week was the iPad, and it still is the iPad. Never have I seen a device cause so much discussion.
It is absolutely incredible, isn't it? I mean, everybody is talking about the iPad. Even the people that don't know what it is are saying, what's an iPad?
Well, even there's folk in the office who are like total non-geeks, and they're like, are you getting one of those iPads then? And you're like, what? How does this work? So, to be fair to you, I think we need to give you your place, first of all. And what was your thoughts? You missed our iPad show last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to be, it's obviously an incredible device, but it is a big iPod Touch, which is what I was pretty sure it was going to be. But I think people are missing the point that actually the things that brings, which is quite is quite unique, the pricing is quite interesting as well. I think they've done some really, I think it's cheaper than anybody was expecting.
Oh, by far.
And that's really interesting. The stuff with the iPhone OS, and I'm still not totally convinced about that, but then I think we're just going to have to wait and see how it pans out, really.
So hardware wise, you look at it and think, good device.
Undoubtedly, great processor, great battery life on it, and it's just it is great. I'd still like to see actually how it really works in real life. I think until you've actually got one in your hand,
definitely,
and see how the typing and text input and things work, But actually, it not being a netbook, there are a number of things where I think, now, hang on a minute, you know, what about printing, for instance? How can you print from this device? There's a number of things like that, and you think, hang on a minute, you know, how are you gonna hook into those things? Because the way it works without the kind of the multitasking and stuff, how does that work when you want to print something from your pages, if you're including a really nice looking pages app, and how are you going to print it? So,
well, I think, you know, and it was one of the questions I had on Wednesday was, you know, how's it going to work with files? Because I've talked about how I'm going to have, you know, pages or basically that iWork suite available to me. And my first reaction was, oh, how's it going to work with files? I don't understand. It's all hooking with the iPhone, with iTunes. You know, but since then, there's been lots of tweets about, you know, in the SDK, it's talking about connecting up and you can access files and you're going to be able to download files. And I know there's a couple of, I don't know if it's HP or Epson, I think there's a couple of apps for the iPhone that allow you to print directly from the iPhone to a wireless printer.
Yes, that's true. So, I mean, maybe we all need to get one of those wireless printers, because it is true that most of the MFDs that are out there now support wireless printing. So maybe that's it. Maybe you'll just have to have a wireless printer.
Yes. And there's, I guess it's things like this. Part of me thinks it's all a bit of a compromise in some ways. But then I still look at the device and think, that's a really nice device.
Yes, I think one of the things is, it's like a bit like the iPhone, is that there's some things you run up against things which are a bit frustrating, and it's whether everything else overcomes that. And knowing the way that Apple have this roadmap for all their products, what they're going to put into the ones down the line. So
exactly, and that's obviously the advantage they have. They know exactly what they want to do with the touch, the iPhone. With the iPad and also with the Mac operating system as well.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing to remember is that actually Apple don't have a huge number of engineers actually for the global reach that they have.
No.
You know, they're not Microsoft with thousands upon thousands of developers working on stuff. They have very limited resources. You know, they've been quite, a lot of the developers have been quite upfront, the guys that work for Apple, and saying, for instance, there was a whole lot of stuff before Leopard came out that they were hoping to get fixed. And when they were asked about it, they said, well, actually, you know, we were pulled onto the iPhone for project for 9 months. So, you know, you may be hoping to get some features, but they're not actually there.
Yeah.
So, it's just interesting to see what happens.
Yep. And I guess all I was wanting to maybe cover just now was just some of the commenting that's been coming out. So, I guess, first of all, you've got the kind of the corporate comments. So Adobe have come out, and they've actually been in quite a little offensive in the last few days. You know, comments, it looks like Apple is continuing to impose restrictions on their devices that limit both content publishers and consumers. Unlike many other ebook readers using EPUB file format, consumers will not be able to access EPUB content with Apple's DRM technology, and blah, blah, blah. Oh no, there's no, and without Flash support, iPad users will not be able to access a full range of web content, including over 70% of games and 75% of video on the web. So that was their first initial knee-jerky comment. And then on the Flash blog as well, they mocked up images of the iPad connecting to Flash-based sites, and you saw the little blue Lego block Flash plugin is missing screen. And the only thing I didn't like about that was, A, somebody actually visited the sites from their iPhone and half of them worked, because it just replaced Flash with a content that worked.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a fail. Secondly, a couple of the sites just have iPhone apps that work, and you don't need to actually visit the website. Thirdly, why did they highlight a porn site?
Well, do you know, I thought actually that was a positive thing that was really going against. So you're buying one of these things for your kids, you know, it's got an inbilt porn filter, it doesn't show Flash. I think, you know, that's actually a selling point of it.
Indeed. So no big surprise from Adobe. Microsoft as well, there's no big surprise. It's a humorous world in how Microsoft is much more open than Apple, which I thought was quite a humorous comment. And then they prattled on about how... And this is a bit I didn't really understand. They claimed that many developers of application for the iPhone OS, which the iPad users are not making, they're not making money. And it's like, fair enough, yes, some developers won't make money, but there's also lots of developers making a lot of money, more so than on certain other platforms that Microsoft produce. So, no big surprise from those two.
No, there wasn't any big surprise. And it's obvious, really, if you're Apple and you're trying to control the operating system and all the software on it, the last thing you want is some third-party plugin dictating what you can and can't do.
Absolutely.
Flash support, whether you want it or not. I think the fact that there are now so many iPhone OS devices out there that people will now start thinking, having second thoughts about whether they want to lock down their content on the web to something Flash-based.
Definitely. I mean, it's...
And the guys already are thinking about that, you know. Do we need to do this in Flash, or can we actually use some sort of web standard-based stuff? So that's good.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, I was even, for the few screencasts that we've done, they're all locked in Flash, and I'm thinking probably the wrong move. And it's something we have to go and re-encode just so that we can make sure that anybody can access the content.
Absolutely.
So another thing that's been quite interesting is Steve Jobs has done one of these town hall briefings to the Apple staff back on the ranch, and just saying how on Google we didn't enter the search business, they've entered the phone business, make no mistake, they want to kill the iPhone, and just, you know, all that kind of thing. But the one that made me chuckle, that even asked after he was asked another question, I want to go back to that other question first and say one more thing. He says, this don't be evil mantra, it's bullshit, and the audience roars. What a crowd pleaser.
Well, yeah, I mean, to saying that to Apple employees, you're probably in a safe footing.
About Adobe, they are lazy. And that just says it all. They are lazy.
Well, do you know, the thing with Adobe is, you know, it's not just Apple that has issues with them. Microsoft as well have been really, really annoyed with Adobe for causing a whole load of security issues.
Mm.
You speak to the guys in Apple, and they'll tell you that the majority of the crash reports that they get are from... from Flash. Now, that doesn't mean to say that Flash is the buggiest piece of software on the Mac. It just means that kind of everybody's running it, and so it does crash. But if there are problems with it, there's nothing Apple can do about it.
No, definitely not. I mean, I run Click to Flash, and I run the Flash blocker, and it just got a far more stable machine because of it.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess that the comments that interested me the most weren't the ones from the big industry comments. It was the actual, I guess, the prominent tech bloggers and more so the actual developers.
Yes.
It's been a real debate over the last, we're coming on for almost a week now, and it's still rumbling on tonight. And you're going to Google Reader and every second post is still iPad, iPad, iPad. Yeah. A couple of interesting ones that stood out for me. One of them was from Joe Hewitt. He picked up a lot of press because he was the developer that Facebook used for its iPhone app.
That's right, he did.
Picked up a lot of press when he says, no more iPhone apps for me. But he thinks the iPad is an incredible opportunity for developers to reimagine every single category of desktop and web software. And he just sees it as an amazing start, an amazing opportunity.
Yes, that's true. But, you know, one of the other quotes this week that we were talking about before we came on was another developer saying that actually to convert his native Mac app to the iPad, it isn't trivial, and it's going to take a lot of work. And being a small time developer, it's going to divert him from doing the Mac software. So, is that a really good thing that they've gone down the iPhone OS thing and rather than the Mac OS X. So it's an opportunity, but it's not something that's really cheap and straightforward to do, to take something that you've got already.
No.
It definitely is. You're right. It's that reimagining that's required. And, other developers have been saying, well, do I really want to have to change all my views and screens and everything for my native iPhone app for it to be sold for 99 cents on the iPad store? Is that really going to, is that really worthwhile? Is that a viable business model?
But only those developers will know that, based on sales and based on, you know, coding effort. You know, it should come down to simple economics of how much do I expect to sell? How good's my idea? What can I make out of this? I mean, there's a potential that this is the start of another gold rush. This is a new device and new opportunities with that app store.
Yes, there are, and people with the experience of developing iPhone apps, it's straightforward to move over to develop them for the iPad. You know, there's really not much of a change at all.
I think probably my favourite post was from Fraser Spears, and we'll put the link in the show notes. And it was, he had titled his post Future Shock, and it's now been picked up by Macworld and republished, and it got a lot of retweeting and linkage over the weekend. And it was just a great take on his view on it, is that it's almost like denial. People just can't believe this is the way forward. And there will be a realization that here we go. This is the start of something big.
Yes, and something completely new, in that it's commodity computing. Really, you're not really talking. It's appliance computing, where you're not really thinking about your kind of your computer and all the different programs and things it can run, and are we going to have to worry about viruses and all sorts of things.
It's all about the task, isn't it? So it's absolutely. All. I want to write something. I want to, and in some ways, a lot of what you do in the iPhone is a bit like that. You
yes.
don't think about, fault finding. You don't think about, if I compare how I use my iPhone to me setting up my Mac Mini right now, and I'm looking at scripts to wake from sleep and, getting into the terminal and doing little hacks here, there and everywhere, it is night and day.
Yeah, and I remember when the iPhone first came out, the thing that really impressed me was that, was actually what happened when an app crashed.
Mm.
I couldn't understand why, some things would take you just straight back to the main screen. Well, actually, that app has crashed.
Mm.
But it sounds a really terrible thing that your app's crashed. But actually, the way that Apple handle it so silently and nicely just makes a lot of sense, and hides a whole load of stuff from the user, which is
definitely.
Definitely the future.
There's only one or two apps very near the start of the App Store that actually took the whole phone down. Like the whole phone would freeze and had to switch off and on. And they were, fixed very quickly as well.
That's right, very quick.
It's, considering how much I use it, it's actually a very stable platform.
Yeah.
So, interesting times. There's an update in the Apple website in the UK today just to confirm that late March is the iPad launch date in the UK. Still no price. And that April will be the 3G version as well.
Oh, yes.
So, and also picked up a story in the Register today that they seem to be inferring, and whether they've heard the rumour or whether they're just inferring it from the word and text in the Apple website, that there could be some deals to be done in the UK with providers. So sign up for 2 years broadband and we'll give you it for 100 quid.
Well, already you can get a laptop for free.
Yes.
Inverted commas. If you're prepared to sign up for mobile broadband for 18 months, 2 years. So, and the devices there that they're talking about that you get for free are, kind of netbooks or small laptops worth up to about £400. So it's definitely, it's certainly within the realms of possibility that the mobile networks in the UK will have those deals available.
Indeed.
because they're doing that already.
Exciting times. So, the question, will you buy one?
I'm undecided, really, at the moment, and I'm not really sure whether that's I want to see one in the flesh first. I'm not buying one. I'm not buying one off the page yet.
No, and I'm the same. I guess there's two things for me. Actually, I think once I feel it, touch it, use it, I'll be very impressed, because that seems to be the reaction from everybody.
Yes.
But it's going to be the what kind of apps are coming out and what would I use, and it's all back to that use case.
Definitely, definitely.
Before we move off the iPad, I do have some important business to take care of. Following on from our prediction show, I have some scores.
Oh, what are the scores on the doors? Tell us.
Well, I hate to say this, but Henry won.
Oh!
So, congratulations.
Result.
I don't even know what the prize is apart from the sheer glory of it all.
The glory of it all is I'm already basking in it. I'm already basking in the glory.
Even though you stay about 3 miles away, I might post you a Mars bar. Just to, not deep fried. I hasten to ask for their Southern Puff listeners. It will be just a normal wrapped Mars bar. And second, or should I say joint last, it's myself and Chris.
Oh, dear,
now,
dear.
I'm pretty sure that the little one will be looking at these scores and thinking, no way, I have been robbed. But honestly, I gave him an extra 5 points at one point just to make sure he wasn't last. So he can argue all he likes. He was woeful. It was
I think part of the thing for Chris was, though, to be fair, he was really going for with his what he hoped the device would be rather than what it was.
But what he hoped it would be was basically some crappy PC hardware running in some sort of Mac operating system. It's not going to happen. So there you go. And I've said to Shaquille to work out some sort of forfeit. Now that he knows I am involved in that forfeit, I am not looking forward to it. Moving on, almost a reaction instantly from Amazon, in that Millen Books, who are one of the publishers that are tied up with the iBooks on the iPad, they started negotiating with Amazon, saying that they wanted to increase their prices. Amazon then pulled not only all their books from Kindle, but all their books from Amazon.com as well. Now, I didn't realise how many Macmillan books there were on the Amazon site, but seemingly that was a sixth of the book catalogue on Amazon got pulled.
Unbelievable.
And that was the quote I read today, which is a phenomenal amount of books.
Gee.
So this wasn't just some trivial little, you know, okay, I'll take your 10 books away. This was, okay, we'll just take all these books away. The upshot of this is that Amazon have blinked and they have had to accept the Macmillan deal.
Wow.
The comment that they put out last night, we have expressed a strong disagreement and the seriousness of our disagreement to by temporarily ceasing the sale of all Macmillan titles. We want you to know that ultimately, however, we will have to capitulate and accept Macmillan's terms because Macmillan has a monopoly over their own titles, which you'd kind of hope they would do anyway. And we will want to offer them to you even at prices we believe are needlessly high for ebooks. Amazon customers will at that point decide for themselves whether they believe it's reasonable to pay $14.99 for a best-selling ebook. We don't believe that all of our major publishers will take the same route as Macmillan. And we know for sure that many independent presses and self-published authors will see this as an opportunity to provide attractively priced ebooks as an alternative. Kindle is a business for Amazon and is also a mission. We never expected it to be easy. Thank you for being a customer.
Wow.
Indeed. So it just shows you.
I don't get this at all with the ebooks, that they want to get them to be more expensive. That makes them more expensive than the paper versions.
Well, seemingly the paper versions are dearer than this. Okay. So Amazon were trying to go for a kind of, you know, almost like a $10 price for an ebook and trying to almost set that as an upper limit. From what I can read in all the different places today, the book The book publishers aren't happy with this, wanted a bit of flexibility and a slightly higher price, and Apple said, yeah, we support that. No doubt because, you know, Kindle and the Amazon bookstore is already there, so they have to do something. They have to agree a little.
Well, you see, what I don't really understand about this is what Amazon's game is here, really, because surely it's up to the publisher for what price they want to pay. Surely that's, you know, market forces being what they are, you know, you charge what you think you can get away with, and people either pay that or they don't.
I found it strange when they said Macmillan has a monopoly over their own titles. And it's like, but it's their own titles. If they want to charge, you know, $20 and nobody buys them, surely that's up to them rather than Amazon saying, no, we will only carry it for this cheap price, even if you don't want to sell it like that.
Which is very odd. Which is very odd.
Which I guess is what Apple's wanted to do with music. So.
Yes.
Hmm. But interesting times.
Very interesting.
iPhone OS 3.2. And Gadget had a story up with a whole load of kind of, and I guess, so the new operating system's under NDA, so we shouldn't be talking about it at all.
No, we shouldn't.
But I am just going to report this in Gadget Story. And so people have been looking at it. It contains rudimentary support for video calling, hooks to accept and decline a video conference, flip a video feed, and run a video call on either full screen mode or on just a portion of the screen. Supports file downloads and local storage. So we talked about that earlier on. That seems to make sense with this whole concept of apps that can manipulate files.
Yes.
Which you can't really do on the iPhone right now. Spell checker with multiple dictionaries and user added entries. Much richer text support. Ability to selectively draw to external displays. Which will be very interesting. And it's got, there's ads and maps, and you can upload files via Safari. Modifiable cut, copy, paste, and prototype support for a handwriting keyboard, which just sounds skew-whiff.
Sounds very strange, doesn't
it? I just can't see that ever being one of these devices that comes with a stylus.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
No.
Not going to happen.
I think, you know, just because there are hooks and things there in the operating system, I mean, we've seen this lots and lots of times with the iPhone OS before, it's had, you know, people have discovered hooks for all sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Saying what, you know, as a pointer to what Apple may or may not be doing. And, you know, some of them have hit and most of them have missed. So, you know, you can draw your own conclusions from that. But interesting story nonetheless.
Indeed. Our last iPhone Apple story, I think. Sorry if you're a total Apple hater and you think, what are these two on about?
I know why Chris didn't turn up tonight.
Google Voice is now on the iPhone and not via the App Store. So it's via web and HTML5. So if you go to, if you're in America, because you need to be in America for this to work, m.google.com/voice, and it's a Google Voice mobile web app. So it just shows you that you don't, and I think you're going to see this more and more with HTML5 and the really smart browsers we have now. You don't need to wait for the App Store approval.
No.
And there's not a lot Apple can do about it either.
No, there isn't. But if you want to monetize your app, the App Store is your best bet.
Oh, definitely.
But you know, they've always had stuff for the web and browsing on the iPhone has been you know, the best kind of mobile browsing experience up until now. So
it has been excellent. I must admit, it has been excellent. So I just wish Google Voice would come to the UK because I think I would swap it.
Yeah, could do. I mean, it's I like these voice over IP things that aren't Skype and stuff, but we'll save that kind of technology debate for a underlying technology debate for another day, I think. But Google Voice, great.
Indeed. Another Google story. They are dropping IE6 support.
About time too.
Be gone, evil one. So, and it was a post they'd put up about modern browsers for modern applications. And there's a whole other preamble, but basically they're saying Google Docs, Google Sites from the 1st of March, there's a whole other functionality that they'll no longer support on older browsers, particularly IE6. And going forward, that will be the case. As they roll out features, they won't be wasting time trying to build in support.
That really is a really great move by them, actually. I mean, IE6, to be fair, I don't know many people, consumers, that still kind of run IE6.
I'm glad you said consumers.
But there are many enterprises that still do run IE6 and are kind of locked into that, the whole kind of ActiveX kind of plugin type stuff. Got a whole load of stuff there running and don't really want to. So I think for them, they'll probably have to do something like install Firefox or something as well as the IE6 for some of the legacy apps.
I know if Chris was here, he would just say it's lazy IT departments, but it really isn't.
It's a cost benefit thing, isn't it? You know,
yeah. It's a cost benefit thing, and updating everybody's desktop to a new version of a browser isn't trivial. If you've got a platform with 100,000 users, that's not a trivial upgrade.
No, and trying to get that past your board when you're talking about risks and all sorts of things like that.
Absolutely.
It you're right, it's not a trivial thing. And it's not trivial in terms of cost either. So
no. Something that just caught my eye just before we started tonight, actually, was the Department of Health have issued a statement to NHS to tell them to drop IE6. This was a technology bulletin published by the department's informatics directorate on the 29th of January, advising NHS trusts using IE6 on either 2000 or Windows XP to move to version 7 as early as possible. But there still seems to be, there's other stories kicking around today still saying that the government's advising most of its departments, don't worry, IE6 is fine.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me, you know, government nothing, head in the sand, you know.
Exactly, nothing like a bit of clarity.
Technology, what? Yeah, left hand, right hand, something like that.
Technology, what? I tell you, 3D channel. That's what I tell you.
Oh, yeah.
So Sky Sky had a bit of a, I think it was their, I don't know if it was a quarterly or half yearly profits and all that kind of nonsense last week. Basically, HD's taken off a lot now. And also one of the things that they've committed to and they're now pushing forward with is the UK's first dedicated 3D TV channel. So from April, they'll start rolling out to pubs, broadcasting live Premier League games in 3D. And you do have to wear glasses to see this.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so this weekend passed. There was 9 pubs selected across the UK. They put in some LG 3D TVs. And they had from like 100 to 150, you know, people watching the Man U Arsenal game, all wearing glasses.
All looking like Chris Evans or escapees from a Proclaimers concert.
But the bizarre thing for me is, and a lot of the time, especially, see if you're at home, you will be more focused on the screen, but see if you're in a pub, you're going to be turning around all the time. It just sounds absolutely bizarre. Even in a cinema, you're focused on the screen, but are you really going to be that focused on the game, like, solidly for 45 minutes?
Yeah, but do you know what there is, though, here? There's an opportunity for the likes of Oakley or people to come out with some really, really good designer 3D specs.
See, this winds me up, because out of CES, there was all these blooming, you can get prescription 3D glasses, and you're like,
how cool is that? How amazing is that?
I know, but it just costs me so much money.
It's brilliant.
It's rubbish.
I mean, well, that would be good, though, wouldn't it, though, Ian? You know, I mean, can you imagine then if the likes of glasses users, you know, don't actually, glasses users, listen to me. I mean, like, it's an operating system. An operating system for your eyes.
Feels like it.
But, you know, if you didn't actually have to put on a set of glasses because it was they were already polarized in your lenses.
It'd be fantastic. It'd also be everybody joining my world. You know, welcome to my world of, imagine watching a 3D outdoor concert and it's raining. Fantastic. Go and clean your glasses, you swines. The feedback from the weekend was mixed. So I've not seen any 3D yet. I've not seen Avatar in 3D. I'm going in a couple of weeks' time to the IMAX, which I'm quite looking forward to.
Yeah, that will be good.
But I'm pretty sure I'll walk out with a migraine and think, never again. The feedback from the weekend was that certain shots that Sky had set up were absolutely amazing. So all the graphics with their logos was superb. Seeing the players walking out, the tunnel, the crowd, there's a real sense of depth, and seemingly it was very good. But the actual game itself, it felt like, you know, people were watching an HD game.
Yeah.
And they didn't really feel as if there was that much gained from the actual match itself. And I'm
not surprised at that, because you know, normally most of the you know, the players are fairly small on the screen.
Yeah.
And there's not much distance. There's not much difference really in distance between the player and the pitch itself, for the majority of shots. So if you've got the kind of close-ups of players and things, I can, you know, obviously that's going to be much better. But for the majority of the game, I can't see really that it would make much of a difference. So
no, I'll be honest, 3D TV is not ticking any boxes for me at the moment. I don't see the big sale.
Well, it's a bit of a gimmick, isn't it? But it is something else that they can charge extra for, isn't it? And get you to buy another box.
It's another TV, and obviously that's why. Oh, there's a whole lot of things. It's another set of hardware you need to buy, and also they're hoping it cuts down on piracy. And this whole you can't go in a cinema and record it nonsense.
Mm.
One little point to note on the Register article from today, the guy that was reviewing it on behalf of the Register. And they said the LG TV, and it was only, I think it was only a 42 or a 47 inch, so not particularly big, you know, for a pub size. And obviously for the home, it's big enough. But seemingly the TV was excellent. Each good 3D shot was crisp, clear and immersive. It had an amazing viewing angle, allowing me a good view from any point in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Which, because I actually wondered, would it be one of these, is it only the people like dead straight on, or is it going to be everywhere? But seemingly wherever he was, he felt he got a good view.
Very good.
So, interesting times.
Very.
A couple of quick game-related stories, which probably have no bearing whatsoever on the UK right now, but hey-ho, let's go on. PS3's been hacked. So almost every other console has been hacked really quickly, but the PS3 has taken, I mean, that's 3 years, I think, to be hacked. What will this give us? Nobody really knows. Will it just be cracked games, or will it be, you know, taking that Xbox Media Center front end and slapping it on a PS3 and having HD output and all that good stuff? I guess only time will tell. But it was just, and it's the guy behind a guy behind a lot of the iPhone hacking. So George Hotz.
George Hotz.
I'm sure, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but in my head, that's how it sounds. And so it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. And we've mentioned OnLive a few times before. So OnLive is this concept of a really cheap box, or just your PC or Mac or your iPhone, and you're playing a game that's actually on a server. So all you're doing is streaming the video. And I've always been really doubtful of this, just because of lag and stuff like that.
Yeah, we were talking about this work with a few guys last year, and really, you know, it's really incredible that it got as much press, I suppose, as it did, because I just can't believe that it will actually really work.
Well, the thing is, it's actually got a number of, almost all the big game companies are involved in testing this, so it has got a lot of critical backing. And I guess the interesting thing, OnLive started its beta testing, but they're not allowing any beta testers to speak publicly, which is slightly worrying. I always kind of get slightly worried when they say, yeah, you're on a beta, but you can't tell anybody.
Mm.
Similarly, one of the gaming websites last week actually got access to an account, so they weren't part of the trial, and they played it and published the results, much to OnLive's annoyance. So basically the guy found it was quite laggy. The graphics compared to his local, you know, played graphics weren't poor, but it certainly wasn't as sharp or as detailed. And depending on the game, some games were okay, other games really laggy and just, you know, pretty unplayable. OnLive came out and says, well, you know, the way the accounts work, they know where you stay and it's optimized for your location, and there's a whole load of reasons why. Exactly. There's a whole load of stuff. You're just like, this sounds like you're trying to, you know, turn it into like some sort of black art as to why this didn't work too well.
I mean, let's be fair here. I mean, it's a very difficult problem to solve.
Absolutely. I mean, that amount of it, I still can't get in my head that being able to sit on any client and play a game and the video getting sent through in quick enough time that makes it all playable. The science doesn't work in my head at the moment.
I don't think it does. I don't think it does work. I mean, we could complain at the moment about the state of, you know, broadband, certainly in the UK.
Absolutely.
It's the kind of thing that I can imagine in Korea or whatever, where they've got, you know, kind of faster than many networks, local networks, their broadband, then you've got a chance of getting a thing to work like that. But really, I mean, even sending video over network is always going to be subject to huge kind of lag and there's a huge amount of stuff you've got to do. So very tricky, and hardly surprising, really, that report, is it?
No. But again, we'll see how the year goes, because it's not just online. There's a couple other competing firms as well doing a lot of work last year, but they've gone suspiciously quiet. And that's our news for the week. Short and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on to some picks. I'll crack through mines first. I was actually struggling for a pick this week, and then realise there's a tool that I use every day on all my Macs that I haven't mentioned before, and that tool is called LaunchBar. Mm-hmm. So LaunchBar is basically it's almost like a shortcut tool. And I think anybody listening that's used a Mac's probably heard of Quicksilver before. So Quicksilver was invoked by a keyboard shortcut, and it allowed you to then, you know, quickly find an application to launch, or quickly send out an email address, quickly find an email address, or compose an email without actually launching emails and finding people, etc. So it's a really nice way. I mean, I've got it invoked under, instead of using Spotlight, I just use my command space and it launches LaunchBar. And straight away I can then just command space and then start typing a word. So if I was wanting to launch Safari, instead of trying to find a mouse and getting to my dock, I can just command space and start saying SAF and it'll find it. Another thing is, it's nice about LaunchBar is you can start to train it. So you can say, well, actually, if I just type S, I just want Safari to run. So it's a really, that's just one aspect of it. I mean, I guess one of the things that surprised me about this tool is just how much it does. So I can, not only can I launch, I can search and control iTunes. And even that's so much quicker than firing up iTunes itself and try to search within iTunes. I'm quicker just firing up LaunchBar, looking for the track or band or whatever, and it does really nice things like searching for an artist. It then just automatically pulls together a playlist of all my 4 and 5 star rated tracks for that artist.
That's good, isn't it?
You know, so just little things like that, just out the box, is sitting there available to you. One thing that on its own is probably worth the money is a clip history. So you get quite a lot of tools that give clip history. This is a clip history up to 40 items. And also remembers that history after restart. So it just means, and again, it's a different shortcut. So you can do command backslash, or you can do the alt command backslash, and you can then just start to easily just search through, you know, all the different cuttings in your clip history, and then do things like, well, take this one and merge it with another, or take this one and send that to this email, or take this one and send it to terminal, and just really, really nice. And there's a whole load of other stuff in there as well. Custom searches, you can actually add in. I mean, you can do things like search Google from LaunchBar, but you can then say, well, actually, I want to search Wikipedia, or I want to search, I don't know, whatever search engine you're looking for. And you can actually add that index on, or that index pattern into the tool itself.
Wow.
So it does loads. It's €24, and it's probably my first tool that I install on a Mac, because after that I'm good to go.
Very good.
And I can do all my Spotlight searching from there as well, so that's why I replace it with the Spotlight shortcut.
Uh-huh.
So highly recommended. I'll put all the... It's the kind of thing that I could probably prattle on for about an hour, all the different little bits and pieces you do on it, and I'm probably still not even covering everything in there. but a very, very handy tool.
Very good.
Henry, your pick.
Well, my pick this week is a website called zootool.com, which is one of those ways of sharing links and things that you find on the internet. You could obviously you can do that through it's got links to the usual kind of Twitter and Facebook and things, but you have little bookmarklets that you can use just to pick up different things that you find around on the web, and there's a whole load of obviously the usual kind of tags and things that you can put to that, so you can find what other people are looking at, a bit like you know, that kind of you could use it a bit like StumbleUpon or Delicious or those kind of things. What makes this really good, I suppose, is that it's a really nice looking site. They've done a lot of work with lots of kind of the pop up kind of menus, and it just looks really, really, really nice, really easy to use, and works really well. So it's kind of a new social networking, community sharing kind of website. I didn't really know that there was much market for another one of those, but if there is, I think Zootool's definitely right up there, and I've been using it for a few days now. Really quite like it. It's good.
That's wonderful. I'm actually on the site just now, and I just found a fantastic image full of game controllers.
There you go. So, and actually, I found another thing there, which had a whole list of best top kind of roundups of different apps and things. So that's got my kind of picks sorted for the next about 10 years.
You lazy dog. It reminds me in some ways of, I don't know if you've ever tried it, Little Snapper and Ember.
That's right. Yes, so, it is. You're right. It's very similar to that.
Yeah, it actually looks really nice. And is that free to join?
Free to join.
Fantastic. Great pick. Two great picks, even if I do say so myself.
Yours is very good.
Yep. So, that's us for the week. If you like to find out some more about us, our website is digitaloutbox.com. We'd love to get your emails, info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. So any comments, any feedback, please do get in touch and we'll try and reply as quick as we can. Henry, your blog?
Is talkrhubarb.com/WordPress. And you can find me on Twitter as talkrhubarb.
Fantastic. My blog is indie.net and I'm on Twitter as Shweepa. I'm just to round off, I think I want to post 5 or 6 on the Mac Mini marathon post session.
Well, I must admit, I've been looking forward to those and really enjoying your stuff. And I'm thinking, if I get to set up one of those, I've got it, all the information all in the
you
one
have.
Place there.
Boxy was posted up yesterday. Through the week, I hope to have a post up just about the different ways of controlling the Mini, and then I'm going to do a post on Xbox Media Center, the old original one. And I've still got another 6 or 7 posts because it's going to get scarily, geekily, dangerously illegal soon. Indeed.
Sounds intriguing.
I might mention not torrents, but the other thing that I can't mention in case they ever shut them all down.
Mm. Yes.
But that's for another day.
That you use your Unison app for.
Yeah. Thanks for listening and join us again soon. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Done
and dusted.
Fantastic. Even before your alleged time limit, which I don't know when it was for.
Yeah, no, I've got to go now. I don't have my keys to drop, but yeah.